like many family caregivers, when your mom took ill with lung cancer in the 80s, you brought her into the house and you nursed her. You know, she was a nurse, but...
Yeah, she was. Well, she was living in San Francisco, and she lived there as long as she could in a little apartment, and finally it came time that she needed to move in with me. And so I went up and got her, closed her apartment, we gave her a big party, huge, huge. So many, everybody on Polk Street, which is a wonderful neighborhood there, came. She had many, many nurse friends, many of them gay, many of them just loving her because she was a great lady. And I brought her down and into the house, and she was doing fine. She did not need nursing care at that time. Just, you know, it was great to be around her and let my little girl get to know her, who was newly adopted, and it was great. So it was more of a family, grandma coming, moving into live rather than a care situation. Then it went into that, and I had to get the hospital bed and have people come in and so forth. But it was wonderful to have that last time with her.
Well, you employed something that I so firmly believe in, as called as validation therapy. When your mom thought she was on a ship, rather than, you know, try to disabuse her of the notion, you
yes.
went with her and went where her reality was. And I think you, as a family, you had a good time together.
We did. Yeah, she would make these references. But have you read that section? Have you read the whole book?
Yeah, I read the whole book.
Because
I
was hoist on. I was hoist on my own petard because I started, you know, she'd say, oh, it's nice that the captain lets the dogs on board. And, you know, it was my two dogs sitting in the bedroom. And she just said, it was like a half. She knew I was there. She knew their names. She was not in some strange fantasy world. She just thought she was aboard a ship. She'd say, oh, smell that ocean air. Isn't it great? You know, those kinds of things. And then one day she said to me in her deep sleep, Val, what are three bells? And I said, oh, you think we're back on the ship? She said, no, I'm in my room at your house. I was just wondering what three bells are. And I laughed so hard because I had entered the thing and she wasn't there. I had entered her fantasy, but it wasn't a fantasy at all. It was her asking me, what's the meaning of three bells, the way of telling nautical time. Yeah.
Tell me about the fabulous Mrs. Vanderbilt.
Oh, well, she was a fabulous woman, nothing to do with the Vanderbilts, just on her own. She was a very lovely, elegant lady from Mexico, Felisa Pablos. And she was my neighbor, and we knew each other for years. We walked together. We had lunch often. And then she started to decline. No disease, just age. She died at 96, and I became her conservator when she was about 94, or maybe even younger. 92, when she started falling and having trouble getting her medication, simple ones, nothing to do with disease. And she had been married to Cornelius Vanderbilt for 8 years. He was drinking too much, and she, this was in the 30s or something, Gary, she left him. I mean, this was unheard of. And her Catholic family in Mexico said, we can't have a divorce in the family. She said, well, I can't have this man as my husband. And she moved to herself, bought a little house in Beverly Hills. Fabulous woman. Kind of like a Katharine Hepburn spirit and fabulously beautiful and just dear. And we became family. And she was like Christina's, you know, make-believe grandma and my good friend. She was about 25 years my senior, but we were so friendly. And I had to get caregivers for her. I hired a company, but you need to stay vigilant as a care. If you're now, I was a conservator, but I was more than that. I was a daughter. I wasn't a professional conservator who comes and makes visits. I would go in the middle of the night sometime if I suspected a caregiver of sleeping on the job. There were two. One was to stay up and one was to sleep. And I found people there sleeping and my doctor would say, fire them immediately. You're paying all this money, and the caregiver's organization the company can't always be on that. But I found that just coming up at unspecified times was very important.
I think so too. That's
11 o'clock in the afternoon. Cause sometimes breeze in at 4 with some cookies. You know, you stay on it in a different way. And of course, people, if they know your schedule is hard and fast, that, you know, that you work 9 to 5 and can't get over. But I found it to be an interesting thing to do. And we had wonderful caregivers. We found one that last, a wonderful lady named Helen Mays that was there for 2 years straight. And then you have, but you gotta stay on top of it. You have to stay on top of who's there and what they're doing and are they doing their job. And I think that works really well. And of course, reputable caregiving outfits. Is key. That's key.
So you have to manage. You can't just say, oh, I have a reputable caregiving office. I don't have to think about it. You have to be
Yeah, you do. You really, yeah. I think you do. And they're there doing all that and letting you have a life. But it's, and beyond that, your loved one or your person that you are responsible for really need to see you. You know, and even if they're a pill, let them be a pill for a few minutes, but you show up and bring him a rose or, you know, whatever the guy wants.
So
I don't know, a little throw for his lap or something. Just every so often, not on a necessarily an occasion. But that's what I found worked really well. And also, she was my sweet friend, and I wanted to see her. So for me, it was easy. Sometimes it's not because it gets difficult. But I also think that acknowledging the caregivers is very important.
Be positive but unexpected. They can't expect you're going to come.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe a little box of candy. It's a really interesting thing because we're all living longer. We need to look at this area and really take responsibility for it. And with the rising cost of everything, sometimes mom or dad or uncle have to stay in the house, you know, and you can make adjustments for that. But you can't sacrifice yourself completely on the altar. You can't. You're working. You have younger children. You have stuff you have to do. So just keep your chin up and put yourself in their shoes or in their bed.
Any other challenges with conservatorship when you were a conservator for the fabulous Mrs. Vanderbilt?
Oh, she was so beautiful. At 96, she was a beauty. Oh, sure. As she was declining and then dealing with sundowning, I would walk in the room and she'd be angry or say, Valerie, you were supposed to be here. Oh, I'm sorry. Or I don't want to see you now. Okay, sure. And I'd turn around and walk right out and wait a few minutes. Wait a few minutes and then knock on the door. And she said, oh, Valerie, come in. How good to see you. It's patience, I think, is part of it.
Your patience,
I mean?
And your attitude goes a long way towards making sure the person you care for
is comfortable and feels good about. I mean, the sundowning is real. I always, when I visited, made sure that it was, she said, oh, I wish God would take me or something. I said, well, he will when it's time. I try to make it light. See, and my mom used to say to me, oh, Valerie, I'm sorry, you have to go through this death watch. She had lung cancer. And I said, Mom, it's not a death watch. You're alive, it's a life watch. When you're dead, it will be a death watch, and we will have a funeral. But right now, we're living. She said, okay, let's watch Perry Mason. You know, you can steer it that way for them. So that while they're alive, and not just thinking of, with fear of what's ahead.
You know, your own lung cancer diagnosis.
Yes. Well, I was. Yeah, absolutely. And I had it surgically removed and there was no chemo or radiation indicated. And so I'm, you know, moving down that path. You're always vigilant about it coming back. And I have a lung scan every 6 months. But this disease is insidious and it can reappear in other places, and you know, you just have to watch. And early testing, you said those were your words, didn't you tell me that?
That's my new favorite words. And also your
ET. Yeah, early testing was mine. I was getting an x-ray for a wrist operation and they found this little disc on my right lung, and they took out the lobe and the disc, and that was 2009. So all is well. I'm knocking wood, and we're moving forward.
Well, you know, one thing that also touched me in that part of the book was your friend Nicole came with you, and she said,
I've been having
this nagging cough. Maybe I should get checked, too. And it turned out she had lung cancer as well and is doing well because she got it checked because she saw it.
She got in, and now she is being treated with chemo and radiation and is off the radiation. Now, she's doing quite well, and she's now on her, you know, her third 3 years. At the same time, she was detected when I was. She's 2 years older, and she's doing great. And the funny thing is, the way cancer is now, it's gotten so boutique. I mean, there's so many different kinds, so many new interventions, so many new drugs. They're really doing, you know, groundbreaking work on it. I said, where are you? She said, oh, I'm at chemo. She said, Valor was a sale. I said, what do you mean? She said, it's standing room only. So we laughed together about that. Yeah. She's a great girl, and she's my friend since 1959. We were little girls together.
Another one of your phrases that I just love is, let's not talk about watchful waiting per se, let's change it to active vigilance. I love that.
Yeah, that I heard on television. It's not mine.
Okay.
Do not attribute it to me, Gary.
Okay.
It's a wonderful doctor who works with prostate cancer people. He works with them, and it used to be watchful waiting was a term that they, he said, I want to change to active vigilance, and that's what you need. And we should all do that in our lives. You know, test, see, you know, what is it? Accept but verify. This is really know what's going on in your body. Get an MRI. Get, you know, tested if you are feeling something. Don't just say, oh, it must be the flu, you know. Because there's too much technology now that can intervene and extend our lives. Okay?
Exactly. The other thing that you mentioned, and it's a quote that I hadn't heard before, but I really love, and it says everything to do with what we call fearless caregiving, and it is a quote from Oprah that you told me. Forgiveness
is
the hope that things could have been different. How wonderful
That's
is that?
Correct. Isn't that wonderful? Because then she doesn't have to like the rapist when she was a little girl or whoever it was, but she is not carrying him around. She is not locked in an embrace with this person who did her so poorly to a young child. She can say, I forgive you. I don't forget. You're not my friend. You're not in my life. But I don't have to. I accept that that happened. You know why that's smart? Because it happened. Anything that happens to us, it is the past, it is there. But you don't have to carry the past. You can drop it off, and it's as easy as opening up your hand and dropping it, like it's a piece of lead. You know? That's Oprah. That's pure, beautiful Oprah.
And that so applies to family caregivers, because when you get a caregiving situation, a lot of times old, you know, undealt with, negativity comes up. Oh,
yes.
Well, better. You got the red bicycle. I didn't get that.
And yes. But that's an opportunity to clean it up and drop it. It's an opportunity. Caregiving is a great opportunity to clean up old stuff, not hold on to it and be right. I'm right. You're right. No, Mama gave you the pearls. So what? So what? Doesn't have to mar our relationship.
So
you're right, Gary.
Attitude is half the battle plan, I think.
It is indeed. Indeed it is. It is half, I'm sure, maybe more.
If you got on an elevator with a family caregiver and you were never going to see them again, and you only had about a minute with them, what would the most important piece of advice you'd like to impart to them be?
Take the opportunity to tell them you love them, however that manifests themselves. I guess listen, like in life. Listen, respect them, even if they're not making sense, or even, you know, keep respect for their humanity in the room. And don't get into old patterns, if you can. You know, old patterns of, try to communicate in a new and, what would I say? Supportive way. Keep the question in front of you. What can I do to benefit her? what can I do that will, you know, make her comfortable in this moment? Keep that, or him. What can I do that would, how can I help in this moment? Just in this moment, not forever. I guess that's it. I guess putting the person first, like mothers do. Mothers put their children first. That's what they do, most of the good ones. I love you, Gary. You're just a sweet, sweet man, and I love what you're doing. And